2022, I believe we were showing the adjusted net profit was $565K off of a million in sales.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, this is Justin, and you're listening to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Welcome back, and I hope you enjoy this episode with Jeff Gartner, founder of Hudson Valley Swim. Today we're discussing why it's important that every young child learns how to swim, why this swim school franchise doesn't have to build a swimming pool, and why this is one of the most rewarding opportunities in franchising. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays.
All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Pursuit of Profit, Phrenosity, Cliff, Justin, and guests of the podcast may maintain positions in the franchises discussed on this podcast.
So we've had a lot of really unique, exciting, interesting brands on the show since we started recording the pod. I don't know that any of them could say that they save lives, which is something that Hudson Valley Swim does. For anyone who listened to our 2024 Trends and Predictions podcast, if you didn't, I think we recorded it back in December, I guess, of 2023. One of the categories that we were most bullish on was youth enrichment as a category. So that could mean education, it could mean athletics, youth sports, music, art. We just felt that parents will spend money on anything that their kids could benefit from other than sitting in their room in the dark, playing video games, or staring at an iPad all day, right? And so swimming is something that kids definitely benefit from. It's a skill. It is great exercise. And as we're going to talk about today, we're preventing drowning in this country. So Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to talk all about your brand. We love this opportunity. And to kick it off, before we talk about kind of the story leading up to the launch of this franchise, let's talk about the model. Okay, so let's start with who is Hudson Valley Swim and what do you do?
Hudson Valley Swim is a swim school, first and foremost, and we fit in a few of those verticals, as you had mentioned. So we're education, child services, child enrichment, as well as, you know, sort of that sports and athletic thing. And our mission really is to save lives. Hudson Valley Swim has been around since 2003. The idea started, you know, a year or two earlier than that in my own backyard, as I would have my own kids, you know, teaching lessons. I would bring an instructor in, and living in the Northeast, you know, we have a very short swim season. And so after, you know, their lessons, where do you go? You know, and that's really the crux of the problem. So what we did was we started looking around at some of the other programs. And back then, you know, the swim school market really wasn't evolving the way it is now. So your options were the YMCA or the JCCs, you know, the kind of the community centers. And when you look at the community centers, you know, they were very budget friendly, but in exchange for that, they really packed classes in. So, you know, my kid was one of 12 sitting on the wall waiting for their minute or two to with the instructor. And when you're coming from sort of an instructor that was teaching, you know, my kids and a few of the other neighborhood kids where there was a much smaller ratio, the quality of the instruction they received was just drastically different. And so that's really where the concept that we developed that long ago was. So the next thing was find a pool. So we looked around a little bit, and eventually we actually developed a relationship with a Gold's Gym, and we started renting the pool there. Actually, it's really only a couple lanes of the pool, so the pool remains open while we're, you know, for lap swim while we do our lesson program. And that's actually a very symbiotic relationship, because you know, we're bringing new eyeballs through their gym. And very often some of our customers become their members. And so that's, you know, very beneficial, obviously, for them. It's beneficial for us because we can mine their membership. And so we're actually, you know, being able to market to their members as well. So it's actually a very win-win type of a situation. Over time, we've added a few additional locations. We're actually up to 8 locations now. We just added 2 more.
Congrats on that. Let's stay on the real estate model, right? So a lot of people hear swimming pool. They think, wow, that sounds big. I have to go build a swimming pool facility. That would be a multi-million dollar investment. We love these models where you're using other people's pools, right? So I'm in gyms all the time. These pools appear to be highly underutilized. You rarely see people in the pool, especially certain times of the day. I mean, the gym is kind of empty. There's like no one in the pool. So I'm assuming you're taking advantage of that. And you talked about the symbiotic relationship. Do you focus on gyms? Like, do you know what percentage of your customers come from the gym, like that are gym members? Do you want to be in a gym or could you use any indoor pool?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. The pool rental model is the one that we prefer. That's the one that we've been leveraging. There's a number of reasons, including what you mentioned, as far as the initial investment. Instead of millions of dollars, the initial investment is really just first month's rent from a facility perspective. Fitness facilities are a great, really, model. Now, that's not the only model. We'll also operate in schools, community centers, hotels, tennis clubs, even outdoor. So while outdoor isn't a year-round type of a thing, it's a good summer business. So we actually, corporate-wise, operate in all of that. So we actually can demonstrate, you know, the success. You know, here's what it'll look like in a hotel. Here's what it'll look like in a fitness center. You're right. The pools are always underutilized. And the fact that we're not closing it down to their membership, there are lap swimmers that come in. But the fact that it still remains open during all that is very, you know, palatable to the owners. The good thing is you know, that. Well, the bad thing for them, I mean, they're paying to heat the pool, to put chemicals in the pool, often very, you know, and have the lifeguards if they're in a state that requires that. But this is a revenue source. So you might as well monetize your pool. You've got square footage in your facility that is not generating any income.
Might as well utilize the space. So with anything brick and mortar, like it, to me, this is all about the pool. We know the demand is there. Once we have the pool, I don't think you're going to have a very hard time acquiring customers. We'll talk about the acquisition model, but it's all about the pool first. Now, if I'm going to buy a franchise with, you know, a food franchise or a fitness franchise or any other brick and mortar brand, I buy the franchise first and then go through this site selection process where the franchisor supports me with identifying the right space. And then I go through, you know, lease negotiation and construction projects and all that. With this model, Am I responsible as the franchise owner for finding that pool? And what if I buy the franchise and I can't find a pool? I mean, has that happened? What are the chances of me not identifying a pool? Whose responsibility is that?
One of the things that we've done is developed relationships with some of the national fitness brands. Okay. And so we have a good idea what inventory that they have. Now that we're not, you know, exclusive to those brands. What we try to do is prior to closing, we try to identify the territory that they want to operate in. And if it's one that has, you know, a good demographic, we help locate that pool. And so if it's not something that we sort of already have in inventory, then we'll reach out to the different owners of water and try to negotiate that in advance of them signing the franchise agreement. Now, that might aggravate some of the brokers, but I feel that's probably the most ethical way to operate. You know, it's in the best interest of the franchise ultimately, but I would really hate to say, you know, look, all right, you bought the franchise and the best we can find you is this swamp, so go ahead and operate. You know, I just want to make sure that we can find an environment for them to be successful. And so we try to lock that in advance.
In this scenario, I totally get it. a broker is not going to be very successful selling franchises to people that can't open their franchises. So you got to have the space, right? You got to have a pool if the person's going to have a successful business.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we have found a few territories where we just had to, you know, let them walk away because we just could not find a pool or something that was suitable.
Okay. So once we have the pool, now who's the customer? Right. So when you talk about swim survival, I'm assuming we're talking about infants or toddlers first and foremost. And then like, is, you know, what's the lifespan of that customer? You know, is there a recurring revenue model? Is there a long pathway where kids can continue learning like new swim strokes through high school and college? Or no, is this just about teaching young children how to swim to prevent drowning?
We're a little bit different than some of the schools out there. We start at, you know, 5-6 months, the infant side of it, but we don't end at 12 years old. I mean, some schools will end at 12.
At 5-6 months, is this, I've seen these videos where they're like throwing a baby in the pool and they're just like kind of like popping up and like floating. Is are we doing that? Is that what we're doing?
Well, that's called ISR. That program, you know, has, okay, you know, the various degrees of success. We take a more nurturing model.
Yeah. I mean, I see them throw these babies and I'm like, man, it scares the crap out of me.
Yeah. So when you're trying to take a child, I mean, that's traumatizing, honestly, you know, and they eventually get it, or not all of them, but I mean, most of them get it. But we want to be able to take them from that step to kind of learning the learning phase. And if they're traumatized, it makes it a little bit more difficult. And so we have a much more nurturing approach where we're introducing them to the water, we're getting them to float without, you know, throwing them in and you know, making them survive. So we have the survival aspect of the program, not just for the infants, but for, you know, any of the beginners. But we do that in a way that doesn't traumatize them. We're not going to force them to do what they don't want to do, because the worst thing that we want to do, you know, have is a crying student, because they're just not going to learn when they're, you know, that emotional. So we start at 6 months, 5 months, sometimes a little early. It really depends on the maturity of the baby and the willingness of the parent. But we go all the way through adult, you know, and there are plenty of adults out there that don't know how to swim. They might have had an incident when they were younger that pretty much has lasted for 50 years. And now swimming is one of those athletic activities that is so good for the body and it's so easy on the body that that's the only activity that they're capable of doing anymore. They can't run anymore.
Yeah, we can grow old swimming, definitely.
Yeah, and so the growth of our adult program has been tremendous the last few years, but it's always a smaller percentage of kind of that sweet spot of the, you know, the younger ones. And then you asked, you know, where do you take them? It is recurring revenue. Most students are coming back for several years. And, you know, they at least get to the intermediate type of a level where they're able to do a backstroke, a freestyle, and so forth. Does everybody go on to the advanced classes? No, not by any means, but we have them. You know, we have six-year-olds that have come through the program and are on swim teams. In fact, we have one student right now, he's competing against 10 and 12-year-olds and blowing them away in the water. We do not have our own swim team. We do that intentionally. We want, once again, we talk about having good relationships, you know, with the fitness facilities. We also have good relationships with the swim teams. They love inheriting our students because they know how to swim already. So our little six-year-old's competing against 10 and 12-year-olds, and he's winning by half a pool length.
I'm watching a video the other day of these two young children in a pool. And this girl jumps into the pool. And I guess she thought she was jumping in and she was planning on holding on to the side. Like, she wasn't wearing any flotation device. What do you call it? Like floaties or swimmies?
Yeah.
She jumps in and she just drifts a little bit away from the wall. I mean, like, she couldn't have been more than like 6 inches from the wall. But she panics and you could see her reaching for the wall. And her brother, who is also a kid, but looks like he was a couple years older than her, is watching and he's like waiting for her to grab the wall. And he's like, all right, I'm like, she's going to grab the wall, right? She's going to grab the wall. And this girl just starts flailing And after like, it seemed like forever, it was probably like 15, 20 seconds, he jumps out, runs around, jumps in and grabs her and pulls her into the wall. If this kid wasn't standing there, like, that's it. It could happen like that easily. This girl would have drowned. It's horrible. I mean, like, just watching this was like, and apparently this is unfortunately way more common than I ever would have expected. These drownings.
I've seen stats like 24% of fatal drownings, because there are non-fatal drownings as well, but 24% of fatal drownings happen at an event, like at a family event, at a backyard pool, when there are supposedly people around watching. I mean, that
it happens fast.
It happens fast. You know, some additional stats. There's 4,000 fatal drownings in the U.S. every year. That's 11 a day.
That's horrifying. You know, that number is just horrifying.
And there's a number, there's probably another 8,000 that are near fatal. And that's what's reported. All right. And near fatal doesn't mean you're out of the woods. You could have, you know, lost oxygen to your brain for minutes before you were revived, which does, you know, and so there's long lasting effects of that. You know, respiratory issues and so forth. So it is a problem. And that's one of the reasons why we don't really consider ourselves, you know, a sport. You know, yeah, when you get to that advanced level, it's a sport. But it shouldn't be competing with gymnastics, you know, and dance and these other things, because this is a mandatory skill. It's no longer an optional thing.
Right.
We know too much about how to prevent. Somebody that takes swim lessons is 88% more likely to survive in the water than somebody that hasn't. I mean, it's measurable.
Right. Yes, there's a recreational component to swimming, but regardless of what sport you choose to put your kid in competitively, every kid really needs to know how to swim. Less than half of children know how to swim, but 85% spend time around water in the warmer months of the year.
Yeah.
So for the staffing model now, we have employees who are somewhat skilled. The employees need to know not just how to swim, but they have to understand the strokes, right? They're teaching kids how to swim properly. In any skilled staffing model, we want to know that there's ample supply of these employees, right? So who are we hiring? How are we compensating these people? How are we finding them? How difficult is it to find and manage them?
The swim schools that specialize in the beginners really don't need a very experienced swim instructor. All right. You know, maybe they were there, maybe they're a high school student that's swimming on a swim team. You could teach them how to teach, you know, the core skills. We're not looking for that type of an instructor. Right, we differentiate from most other swim schools in the quality of the program that we run. It's a program that we've developed over 20 plus years in the business. But we're looking for teachers of swimming, right? So these are people that might have 5, 10, 20 years of swim instruction behind them. We're not looking for that high school student, right? And so yeah, I mean, that the funnel becomes much smaller at that point, but they do exist. And once you do find them, and we help a new owner identify them, we help them interview, and then ultimately they send them to us for in-water training. And that's where, you know, our actual program. So they might have been teaching for 10 years, but they haven't been teaching our levels, our skills, and our program has skills, it's got games, it's fun and so forth, but everything has been carefully thought out so that, you know, when you are playing a game, it's because you're trying to get them to do something in the water. And this is just a way to get them to do that, you know, and it's just teaching 101, I guess. So we've never been in a position where we haven't found a suitable instructor. Now, one of the things that we're developing right now is, all right, so that's your first instructor, but you're going to grow and you're going to need 2, 3, 4, 5 instructors maybe at that facility. All right. And have you ever played the telephone game?
All right. Of course.
Well, you know that by the time it gets around the circle and back to you, it's a completely different story. And what we're
different story.
We're trying to avoid that from happening. So we've trained you. You've trained the next guy's trained, you know, and so forth. By the time, you know, it doesn't work out. And so we're putting a learning management system in place for the instructors. And so basically videos, all of that. It's not in place yet. We're currently working on that, but that's really the goal. So new instructors come in, they go through the online class, they do in-water training with the experienced instructor that knows our program already, that we've trained. And this helps develop, you know, or keep consistency, that quality control from, you know, one instructor to the next, from one location to the next.
So is that lead instructor typically also a manager?
Yeah. So ultimately, they become your lead instructor, your aquatics director, whatever title that you really want. But they're going to be working still under the tutelage. All the instructors work under the tutelage of our National Aquatics Director. And so he's also working with the different locations to talk to their instructors. He plays, you know, he does role playing and so forth. He might focus on certain courses for a little while to kind of re-educate them and kind of get an idea of what they're doing and maybe guide them a little bit differently to keep them on a good path. And in some cases, we're introducing new skills or new techniques. And so we want to kind of roll it out. And so he's responsible for doing that.
Okay, that's excellent. So Jeff, you mentioned starting the business, I think you said 2003, and you started franchising when?
2022.
Okay. So 2 years ago. So just getting your first, how many units have you sold now?
Six. We're about to close on number seven.
Okay. I'm going to assume that these first six locations are not open long enough to be in the earnings claim, but you do make an earnings claim. You do have an item 19 from corporate stores, right? Corporate
affiliate locations. Yes, and in this year's FDD, we do have one that's been operating a full 12 months. So we'll be adding that in as well.
That's great. So, well, I'm going to make an assumption that franchise owner is performing well, right? You're wanting to get this in the earnings claim, which is a good thing. So let's talk about what we can talk about though. So in the 2022, the 2023 FDD that has 2022 numbers, what does that look like? How many corporate locations? And give us as much as you can based on what's in the earnings claim.
Okay, so in 2022, I believe we were showing three locations. We grossed about $1 million on that with, if you impute all the expenses. So if you added in what a franchise would be paying as well, the adjusted net profit was $565K off of $1 million in sales.
Whoa.
Yeah. Those are good numbers. And the thing about that is that some of those locations, while one of the locations, our Newburgh location, is very, very mature, that includes a hotel location that runs only part of the week. And it also includes a outdoor location that's only running in the summer.
Okay. So when you talk about imputing expenses, so these are corporate affiliate locations, and you're saying because they're corporate stores, they were not paying royalties, they didn't have certain expenses that a franchise owner would incur. So if we're going to add those expenses in, so full right. expenses that a franchisee would have, you're showing a net of over 50%.
Yes.
In that business.
Yeah. And you know, now I'm running them very, very efficiently because I'm a little bit more mature.
Yep.
So my classes are full and so forth. So my profitability would be a little bit higher than maybe a startup would, where they're running with one or two kids in a class instead of, you know, maxed out at four. I'm running two classes at the same time, whereas they might start off one class and they, you know, I'm running 7 days a week in, you know, my main location, where they might start off running, you know, 3 or 4 days a week. So as they start to build, you know, then it improves. We, in fact, you know, you mentioned that first location, or I mentioned that we'll have one in next year, in this year's 2024 FDD. They were operating. They ended up buying two more territories. So they bought one last year, about mid-year, and they bought another one this year that they just opened in March. And so that demonstrates, you know, that, you know, they're happy with their first location. They're seeing that good growth, and they're, you know, they believe in it.
We see that often, right? Young brand performing well through their corporate stores, but we don't have this national footprint yet to see proof of concept in all different markets around the country. So a new franchisee is a bit of a pioneer, right? We call these like founding father franchisees. They come in and they say, I would like to be a multi-unit owner, but I want to dip my toe with a single unit or a single territory first. And if this starts going well, then I'll come back and purchase additional units. And it sounds like that's happening, which is great. When you talk about, so go back to the earnings claim, you have three units in there. Is a territory a unit, or is a pool a unit? Or like, in other words, can I own a territory and have multiple pools within that territory?
Yeah. In my case, each of these are territories, but the answer to your question is if within your territory, there's another pool, go for it. There's no additional cost to me, you know, or to the owner. There's no additional franchise fee to bring up a second one. And I believe you should do that. And so if you do have a year-round fitness facility, and then there's a tennis club that has an outdoor pool, go for it.
Okay, right. So that's another thing I like, right? So if I own a McDonald's and I spend $2 million to build out a McDonald's and I want to scale that McDonald's, I'm going to invest another $2 million to build out an additional unit to scale. In this business, we can own more turf, right? We could buy more territories to be able to service a larger geographic area, but we could also run classes through multiple pools within a territory.
Yeah, and when we design a territory, we're designing it for multiple pools, and whether that's ours or a competitor's, there's enough meat on the bone for all of it. So we're looking at 40,000 kids, plus or minus, you know, maybe 10%. 40,000 kids ages 14 and under. So even if there is competition in your area, if they're doing a good job, they're probably full. And so let's say they're just an enormous swim school and they're doing, you know, 500, 1,000 kids. Let's say they're doing 1,000 kids. There's still 39,000 available, you know, the addressable. And so multiple swim schools can operate in a territory, whether it's your two units or competitive units, comfortably.
Okay. So you have $1 million operation kicking off a huge profit margin in the Hudson Valley in New York on we haven't talked about investment. So single territory investment is what?
Including the franchise fee, you're probably in the 70 to 110 range. Okay. Now, just remember that includes several months of operating costs, right? The item seven, the way it's designed. Mm-hmm. We begin generating revenue, you know, at least a month before you even open up. So we're collecting tuition at least a month. So now you have operating capital offsetting, you know, your operating expenses, you know, for those 3 months. And then in the middle of
your
session,
running is it like a grand opening pre-sale type of a deal, or just signing people up for classes?
Just signing people up. There is, you know, you know, the marketing program, you know, obviously is making a big splash. You can call it a grand opening, whatever, but ultimately you're signing people up for classes. What we run is we call sessions that are either 7 or 8 weeks. And so mid-session, you begin enrolling for the next session, all right? And they're paying the full 7 or 8 week tuition right up front. So now you're generating, so this is how you're able to offset those operating costs, even though, you know, a good chunk of that item seven initial investment is showing, you know, 70 to 110 range of expense. There's the startup expense, and then there's the operating expense. That operating expense is what we're targeting to try to offset sooner than later through your tuitions, right? And if you sign up, you know, 50, 60 students, if you have, you start off in that way, the majority, depending on what your tuition is, a good chunk of your operating costs for that session are offset, if not, if not more.
I mean, I can't imagine the operating expenses being very high. You're working from home.
Yeah, there's basically six big categories of operating expense. Six. Okay, I'm holding up five. There's rent, payroll, credit card fees, marketing fees, insurance, and I'm forgetting one. And so we actually, now the marketing is a kind of a interesting thing. We don't expect you to be a digital marketer. Right? That's what scares a lot of owners. So we've developed a business in a box concept. And so we actually look at all lines of the business and said, okay, here's the vendor for that. Here's the vendor for that. We've pre-negotiated rates, the whole thing, including marketing. And so we say, you know, with a particular spend of X number of dollars, you should be able to grow your business. Yes, you could spend more, but at a minimum, if you spent like $3,000 a month in marketing, you're going to be able to grow your business. So we have a digital agency that has a program set up specifically for us, knows exactly what to do, has the content that we've been developing over several years of doing this. So there's the videos and the pictures and things like that. You don't have that yet, right? You haven't been operating. So you're leveraging what we have already, you know, and they know how to get you going.
So franchisee is paying Hudson Valley.
They're paying them directly. Those are contracts between them. So we have bookkeepers, we have the insurance program. Insurance, this is a huge one. All right. If you were to start up yourself and try to get, first of all, you would probably underinsure because you don't know all the different insurance components that you need. But let's say you did. You're going to be based on 0 years of experience running a swim school. What they've done is we have an agency that is basing your rate on the fact that I have 20 plus years of experience. And so you're getting a better rate. And as we bring on more and more Z's into the mix, we're also going to build economies of scale. We're going to get lower rates collectively as well.
Purchasing power, right? So many people, so many franchise owners focus on that royalty, 6, 7, 8% royalty, whatever it is, without ever thinking about the benefits of being part of a large network and having purchasing power that just chips away at that royalty rate, right? I mean, the royalty could really be inconsequential, right? After like having purchasing power from equipment and just vendor relationships and things like that. Awesome. So, I mean, there's a lot that you've learned. There's a lot that you've figured out over the last 20 plus years. You waited 20 years to franchise. Why did you end up franchising? Was that always part of the plan? And why now?
Several years ago, even before I decided, you know, I was approached a few times to, hey, you ought to franchise this because I've turned up. I was able to, you know, get one going, build it, get another one going, build it. My background is in technology and is specifically in business process automations and things like that. And so I sort of started developing the concept of being able to package this thing up and do it again and do it again. And then back in, I'd say, 2021, I got approached and I was like, you know what? I just turned up another location. And I've got kind of that special sauce. I know how to market the program and build it up into something successful. I said, you know what? It's probably not a bad idea. So I did a little bit of research and I looked around. I didn't even realize there was some of these other franchises out there. In fact, I just was ignorant to the whole space. You know, my idea of franchising was no different than most people's idea of franchising. It's fast food. McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts, right? I didn't get it. You know, I get it a lot more now, and I'm a huge advocate for franchising for a lot of reasons. I think what it does is really takes a lot of that risk factor out of starting a business. you know, and that, and those are, that statistic is very measurable and is available as far as, you know, a higher probability of success. That royalty, as you said, you know, is a smaller component overall. I mean, I'm giving you a business in the box. I'm teaching you how to do it, and I'm ongoing coaching. I am your business partner. I'm a minority holder, but that's another thing that I try to do is get our owners to understand that they are the business owner. You know, I'm a partner, but I'm a minority partner, but they have to think about this as their business, you know, really take ownership of that.
Yeah. I mean, as a franchisee, you are an independently owned and operated business doing business as whatever brand you're a part of, Hudson Valley Swim in this case. And we always say the same thing. Think about, so if what is your royalty? Is it
8%?
8%. Okay. Jeff is an 8% partner in the business, right? He's taking on 8% of the responsibility through training, through support, through systems, through vendors, through whatever, marketing, right? And you're 92%. And when you think of it that way, people are usually like, you know what? Yeah, I could totally see the value, not in all brands, but in the good ones that are working well. It's worth it. That's powerful. Again, someone could spend 20 years of their lives figuring this out, right? Or in order to collapse time, just spend $70,000, $80,000 and have Jeff teach you how to do it and leverage his 20 years of experience and intelligence.
And it doesn't end at the sale, right? I do a lot of business coaching, right? Especially with the new owners, I'm meeting every week and going through, you know, different cadence with them. What are you doing? You know, and giving them ideas and so forth. And we're always introducing new concepts. And then we have also something we introduced several months ago. It's a little play on words, but it's the franchise freestyle. So we're in swimming. And so the freestyle, and that's a collaboration we do every month. All the Z's get on the call, and we have a few different topics that we're going to talk about, and we go and we collaborate, and everybody is, you know, providing their own, here's how we're doing, here's what we're doing a little bit, you know, marketing, here's a plan that we're doing in the community, you know, and so we're all sharing ideas and introducing new ideas, and the rising tides, you know, lifting all ships, that's really the concept that we're trying to get to. We're your biggest cheerleader. We want you to be successful, not just because, you know, it benefits us, just it's benefiting you, all right? And it's benefiting your community. The better you're successful, the safer your community is.
There's no doubt you're impacting a lot of lives in this business. It's one of those feel-good models, right? For people who want to feel like they're really doing something good for the community, as opposed to feeding people hamburgers and making them unhealthy, you know, whatever, fried chicken, whatever.
Yeah.
This is something that everyone benefits from. So love the model. You're now a few years into franchising. Your first 6 to 7 operators are up and running. For someone out there thinking of franchising their business, any big surprises here early on? What have you learned?
Use your time before you franchise and early on when you're not that busy to pull your pants up. Get your systems in place, get your business well organized, get your training programs in place. You know, our business in a box concept was not out of the gates. We had all those components there, but very quickly we needed to, all right, insurance is going to be a pain in the butt. All right, so let's go develop work with somebody, work with a national brand to, you know, put a package in place specifically for us. Do that in the different lines of business because A, that's going to help you streamline the whole onboarding process, as well as these vendors understand your brand, it's just going to make it a much easier operational process for your owners. So that was one thing that really, really we learned early on. And we thankfully, you know, I kind of had a background in doing a lot of this and a love for doing that. And so I really embraced it. I think one of the whole FDD process, I just went through the audit. I could not believe how every expense that hit my QuickBooks file, I needed the contract, I needed the receipts, I needed the explanation. I mean, every line item, that one kind of shocked me this year more than any year because I just grew and I had a lot more of it. And I just had to justify every single expense. And so your books are looked at a lot well, as a franchisor, you know, very, very tightly.
It's not easy being a franchisor in New York State. If you're going to franchise your business, consider not being in New York State.
Well, that's a process I believe any FDD has to go through.
The audit, yes, but just as far as registrations and renewals and
that's another one. The renewals, basically, we get blacked out. Thankfully, you know, being a New York State franchise, we kind of go to the head of the line when it comes to the review, so it's not as laborious of a process. You know, often getting some of the more difficult states your first time through might take, you know, 3 months before you get approved. And being a New York State franchise, you know, it's hard to be blacked out. That's another thing. We're blacked out until the New York FDD gets approved. We're blacked out from selling anywhere.
That's the point, right? So 'tis the season, right? That is something unique about New York State is you go dark for every other state until you're registered in New York State.
Yeah.
So it's just something that could be a little challenging. Interesting model, though. I love it. As you know, we have some clients who are looking at the brand. For those out there looking for a low investment, non-brick and mortar business that is rewarding both personally and apparently financially, very high profit margins. Take a look at this one. You could certainly reach out to us for information. Jeff, where can they go to find you?
Well, you could learn more about us at Hudson Valley Swim Franchise. .com or franchise.hvswim.com, either of those URLs. We're actually launching a new website probably within the next 3 weeks.
Very exciting.
We're kind of excited about that. But you could find us on Facebook, find us on LinkedIn, you can find us on Instagram. There's lots of ways to find us. And, you know, the kind of the one big point is our owners really, really enjoy what they do. You know, it's when they're talking to parents, and sometimes these parents have some horror stories, you know, and when they're talking to parents, it just really, really underlines the mission that we're on, you know, and it's different than, you know, a dry cleaning business. Those are good businesses, you know, the doggy poop business, you know, those are good businesses. This is one that you could proudly parade around because you're doing something great for your community. But it's a great brand. It's a great group of owners. We love our owners, and we love to talk to anybody that has an interest in doing something for their community.
Well said. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on today, Jeff.
Thanks for having me, Justin.